The evidence that you're presenting, the increasing detail of this mounting evidence, these forms which come from the IRS itself and letters that come from the IRS, what is the reaction that you see when you present this to an attorney, to a CPA, to people who are supposed to know these things?
The reaction is mixed depending on their background and their mindset. In some cases, it's disbelief, confusion. Bear in mind, they've been trained in government-funded schools where the curriculum is controlled. They are in an area where they have to be licensed to give tax advice by the IRS, which means only what the IRS wants them to know. And you have to understand, even the revenue agents and the IRS agents are not trained from the code. They're trained from photocopies and pamphlets, as John Turner and Sherry Jackson will tell when they speak. Joe Bannister relates the story of how his supervisor refused to let him read the statutes he was supposed to be enforcing as a CID agent for the Internal Revenue. So they're trained only with what they want them to know. And unfortunately, most tax attorneys and CPAs who have not been exposed to the truth or sought to seek it out will pick up the phone, call their friend over at IRS, their contact, and say, I have this client, what do I need to do to keep him in compliance? And expect the IRS to actually tell them the truth. And that's kind of like asking the fox how many foxes get to be in the hen house at one time. So it gets to be a circle of errors. Now, we have worked with many certified public accountants. We've worked with many tax attorneys. The other situation arises in that in our system in America, what they won't tell you is that to be an attorney, you must have a client. For a lawyer to be an attorney, he must have a client. To obtain that client, he takes a dual oath. His first oath is to protect the court, the system, and to be a friend to the court. His first client is the court. His second oath is to zealously represent the best interest of his client. So when those two oaths contradict, which one do you think supersedes? It's refer to Rule 1, be a friend to the court, or we're going to sanction you $20,000 to $50,000, jerk your bar card, and put you out of business. And that's why you will not find an attorney who will challenge a jurisdictional issue, who will challenge a sovereignty issue, because they don't want to be put out of business. You have to learn this for yourself and become your own best expert witness. Know the law and be well disposed to use it. Understand the IRS operates on half-truths. One of their main things is to instill fear, false evidence appearing real. And they do that through confusion and misdirection. They're masters of it. The Brushhaber versus Union Pacific Railroad case is a real interesting case because that one is used not only by the tax honesty movement, but also by the IRS to state their position. Well, how can it be work for both? The IRS says, well, see there, the Supreme Court said in Brushhaber case that you have to pay income tax. And the tax honesty people said, see there, the Brushhaber case says you don't have to pay a tax. In order to find out what it actually says, you have to get the actual case write-up. And then you find the very first line states that the Brushhaber versus Union Pacific Railroad Company case was about tariff laws or excise taxes. It had nothing to do with personal labor compensation. And then you find that Frank Brushhaber was the American representative for a group of foreign investors. Foreigners have no standing to file suit in U.S. courts, so he filed on their behalf as their agent. That's why his name was on the suit. The court did rule that income tax had to be paid, but what it said was that since Frank Brushhaber was the fiduciary agent for these foreign investors who had been allowed the privilege of access into the American marketplace to invest in a federally organized corporation, the Union Pacific Railroad, that it was a privilege. And under the Corporate Tax Act of 1909, their gains and profits from that exercising privilege were the yardstick for an excise tax on the privilege, not on the profits. And as their fiduciary agent, who collected their profits and forwarded the money to them, it was his responsibility to withhold the privilege tax for their activity in the American marketplace and forward that to the government. They never ordered him to pay a tax or even include his own compensation in those calculations, strictly on the excisable activity of foreigners in the U.S. marketplace.